The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, right now. On 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
And welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. We are live in studio on this Sunday morning afternoon, I guess. And we're here to fill in for Dr. Rozelle as he is out traveling again. And this is Dr. Stephanie Pina, and I will be joined by one of the hosts and the speakers for this weekend's, or this week's Wednesday lecture. You're in luck. There's 3 weeks back-to-back of in-house free lectures. So if you haven't had a chance to come down to the Rozelle Center for Healing and really hear about how health and wellness through acupuncture, chiropractic, nutrition, massage can really help and benefit you, this is a great opportunity because 3 weeks in a row is a pretty unprecedented thing. And this week's topic is going to be great because it's not something that you really want to talk about on your own. It's not something that you have a lot of information of, but you keep hearing about it over and over again. And there is no better person to talk about this than our newest clinical nutrition, Eva L. Khatib. and what are we talking about? We're talking about the human microbiome and especially like what's going on in your digestive tract as well too. So it is the good, the bad, and the ugly of your human microbiome in your digestive tract. And that's going to be this Wednesday night at 7 p.m. June 12th at the Rozelle Center for Healing. Welcome, Eva.
Thank you.
Now, Eva, because you're new to all of us, mm-hmm. and I definitely want to have you give a little bit of background mm-hmm. on yourself, because I think it's always interesting how people get involved with nutrition, and especially the fact that you're a clinical nutritionist, mm-hmm. and so that's a little bit different than what other people might have think. They might have talked to their doctor about nutrition, mm-hmm. or they might have talked to a registered nurse or someone that helped them with put together a diabetes mm-hmm. or hypertension protocol. But clinical nutrition is a little bit different. So I would love for you to tell us first how you got involved and a little bit about clinical nutrition, what the differences are.
How did I get involved in this new career path? So I used to be a high school science and math teacher. Shout out to McLean School, which was the last school that I taught at. And the fantastic students I taught over the years really, you know, they are very influential on what it is that you seek out to learn, to answer their questions and to really inspire their learning. As well as, you know, at home, you know, with our family and for myself. So like many people who get into the field of nutrition and health, you know, there's a personal story there as well. But, really the big deciding factor to change the career and to try to continue to influence and educate others came from those students, you know, which were wonderful to have had all those years with. Clinical nutrition, how it's different. Well, you know, a lot of medical schools actually have very few hours, if any hours, of nutrition education. So many times it falls on the doctors to learn the stuff for themselves and on their own. And it's a very, it's a lot of stuff, you know, because you're having to look at the body and the different body systems and how everything is interacting, as well as the biochemistry side of things to see what are the nutrients and nutritional requirements for things to work how they're supposed to.
Yeah, so it's great that like one passion leads to another. Mm-hmm. And really with all the background that you've had in research and kind of looking things up, the human microbiome, its own project that started in 2007.
Yeah.
We're going to get into that in just a little bit as well too, and what information that has really given mm-hmm. us about what's going on in our bodies that are in such a small level that we can't see and we had right. no idea that was affecting us.
And we still don't know all of this stuff. It's just this amazingly fascinating. It's such a cool, you know, new area
right.
that's being delved into.
And we're going to get into why it is more than just probiotics. Yeah. it's a big thing that we kept going back and forth with, because a lot of people come in and they think that's exactly what we're talking about is, oh, I use a probiotic or I eat yogurt. Mm-hmm. And so this is how I'm going to feed my microbiome. But let's step back for a second and really talk about what is the microbiome. Because if we think about it, there's 30 trillion human cells in the body, but there's like 100 trillion bacterial cells and like their genetic
organisms.
Exactly.
Besides just bacteria that make up our microbiome.
So there's more of them than us. So that means we have to pay attention to them.
Exactly.
And it's amazing. And you're going to go over this on the lecture on the 12th as well, too, what those little differences are that really we have to pay attention to this because it is one of the waves of the future. But unfortunately, you know, from the general public and even like you were mentioning, doctors don't know enough about it yet. So we're starting to put together the pieces. So let's talk about what is the microbiome? Where do we find it? And then that kind of importance of why are we studying it now? Like why would this be a big topic that since 2007 to now really has started to gain interest because we're hearing it on the news. We're hearing about it with these products on the shelves, and we think we're getting the best thing. But where's what we need to work with and what we're really starting with?
So, oh goodness, this is such a big topic.
You're only talking about 100 trillion cells.
I know, that's it.
So,
goodness. So how did we get here? I guess is going to be the starting point. So we know that we have the Human Genome Project. And when that was all started, you know, scientists thought that we would definitely find 100,000, you know, genes. Definitely. And when that was completed, it was just slightly over 20,000 genes. So there was this conundrum that was faced, or this big question that was left out there of how can the human body do all of these things that it does with so few genes? And that's where they started to investigate more. And that's one of the components of this lead-in now of the Human Microbiome Project. And just like the Human Genome Project, they're looking at the DNA. So they're looking at, how you say it? So they're trying to identify each of the organisms with its genetic signature. So what DNA it has, so they can do like a forensics on it, you know, so they can identify.
So you basically have this bacteria, viruses, fungus that are normally present in our body. And then they have a response instead of us always thinking of it of, oh, I have a bacterial infection.
Right, this negative thing.
Technically you do, but it's a good thing that helps us function in a number of different ways, which we're going to get into. And I know you will during the lecture as well, too. We're live talking about the human microbiome and everything that's involved with it. Where is it? How does that help us? And what are we not thinking about our health? Like, how is that really affecting us? Are the little buggers and bacteria that's in it causing us, you know, good things as well as bad things? But if you have any questions and you want to get involved with this, you can feel free to give us a call here. The number is 888-630-9625. Again, that's 888-630-9625. And if you're interested in this particular topic too, don't forget, we're going to give you the information, but sign up with the Rozelle Center for Healing or at rozellecare.com. And that way we can get you signed up for the lecture on this Wednesday night, for this fascinating topic. So these bacteria, viruses, fungus, the things we don't even know about.
So let's step back and really answer, you know, what is the microbiome? So those are all of the organisms that live on us and in us. And the more diversity we have of them, the better balance that we have, the less inflammation, all these different things. So, you know, it's really important for people to walk away knowing that we have to have these organisms. You know, they're part of us as much as they need us, we need them.
And that interaction starts as soon as we're born. And the way we're born plays a part into it as
100%.
Well, too.
Yeah. Well, they see a difference in the microbiome of children that are born by cesarean versus children that are born vaginally. And they see throughout the lifespan of individuals that are born by cesarean that they have a higher risk, you know, and the sciences, in biological sciences, we never like to have the black and white, you know, because there's no such thing as black and white in biological sciences. So we like to say it has increased risk of these autoimmune conditions and IBS and inflammatory bowel disease. So it's really fascinating how simply the way that you're birthed can influence your health in the future.
There was a study that said that by day 838 of a baby's life, or a human's life, I should say, mm-hmm. that we can have gotten exposed to a majority of our bacteria. It's mm-hmm. in this already. So we know in that third year or so how much development and growth is going on. So there are a lot of underlying things and purposes for these microbiomes that are in different parts of the body, mm-hmm. you know, the blood, the eye, the digestive
yeah.
tract. So it's not just in
cavity,
the digestive tract.
Yeah.
And they're different in each
mm-hmm.
place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about it, their exposure from the outside world in is going to be different.
Yeah.
So when we look at what's populating, what do they do in different spots? Like we know you just mentioned they mm-hmm. obviously have an issue with the immune system. Mm-hmm. But what about especially with the digestive tract? Because that's where we really think about
yeah.
where these bacteria are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what typical things are going on in the digestive tract thanks to these bacteria and different mm-hmm. microbiomes?
Mm-hmm. So one of the things is the health of the cells of your digestive tract, making sure that those cells have the correct rate of turnover and the correct amount of mucus layer over that's protective. Additionally, in your digestive tract, which is kind of a cool tie-in with immune, is that these organisms ensure that if you are exposed to something, that your body responds to it properly, you know, so that you prevent getting an infection. So they help with your immune response that way. And, you know, also with making nutrients that as humans, we're not able to make, so we need these organisms to make them, like vitamin K2. You know, everyone talks about vitamin K, which we can get from our vegetables, for instance, but vitamin K2 actually is K1 gets converted by these organisms in your gut, you know, to K2. And that K2, you hear a lot about in the news right now when it comes to transporting calcium into people's bones. You know, when we talk about osteoporosis risk, you know, we have to make sure that the calcium that someone is taking is able to enter into their bones so they have new bone tissue formation. So many things.
Yeah. So definitely the gut bacteria is affecting the bone activity.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially activity and breakdown, because both is happening. Mm-hmm. And then we do know that when we have digestive tract disease, organ systems or dysfunction, I'll mm-hmm. say, we know that there may be a population growth of the bacteria that we don't want, but they could be normal bacteria that are also present
right.
in the gut as well.
Right, right. So to step back with the bone side of things, it's if you don't have the right flora, and flora means microbiome, you know, the organisms are in there, that if you don't have the right flora, you're not going to make enough vitamin K2. So as a consequence of not having enough vitamin K2, you have the potential of not having enough push for that calcium to get into the bones. So that's that relationship there with the bones. And there's other stuff with K2 and calcium, but we'll get to that at our talk, you know, our live talk.
All right. Well, we're coming up to a quick break here. I wanted to thank everybody for listening, and we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. We are talking about the microbiome, all those good little buggers that are inside your gut, the rest of your body. And this is leading up to Wednesday, June 12th, 7 p.m. lecture, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Getting to Know Your Intestinal Terrain. And Eva, our new clinical nutritionist, is going to be hosting us. We'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back to the Dr. Tom Rozelle Live Show. We are live in studio taking your questions and talking about the things we don't normally see but are playing such an important role in our health. That is the microbiome, all the bacteria, viruses, fungi, everything that we need to function that usually gets a bad rap. But really what we're talking about is how is this beneficial and absolutely necessity of having the right proper balance of it in order to function with a healthy digestive tract, immune system, even the things that we're going to talk about, And this is going to be the lecture for Wednesday, June the 12th at 7 p.m. with our new nutritionist, Eva. And she's going to be in the office. And it's going to be an amazing lecture because really we haven't been able to go through the intensity of all the new information because it comes out so quickly as far as what is the human biome doing? What is it? So hopefully you're going to join us there. And you can also sign up for that by either calling the Rozelle Center at 703-698-7111. Again, that's 703-698-7117 to reserve your spot. Or you can go online. If you go to our website, you can go to RozelleCare.com. So that's www.roselleCare.com. And if you scroll down, you're going to see the upcoming events and health lectures, and you can click to register there and get your seat for what's going to be a fascinating lecture with really amazing new information. So about a topic that we think we know about it. We think when we have seen the ads for that newest
probiotic
yogurt
toothpaste.
and celebrity endorsements for going to the bathroom well and But it's more than that. It really is more than that. We're going to go to the phones right now, and how can we help you? Hi, Michael. How can we help you? All right. We're going to have Michael call back in just a moment, and we're going to get to his question on the phone in just a second. So why don't we go, Diane from Culpeper, why don't we talk to you?
Thank you so much for taking my call. I am 77, and some years ago I was diagnosed with osteopenia. This past fall I fell and fractured my right hip, and I'm wondering what I should do to help prevent something like this from happening again in the future.
Absolutely. It's a great question. It's a great tie into what we were just talking about before the break as well, too. So obviously osteopenia's got more of a risk, but we know that there's changes in that both bone health already happening. And unfortunately, I think the Western medicine diagnosis of it really kind of puts you as what is your risk prevention instead of what can we do to help. So a lot of the medications are based off of, oh, well, we don't want you to fracture again because it'll kind of be more difficult to come back health-wise. Mm-hmm. You know, we look at it from a couple of different directions in here, and it can be structurally because we want to make sure that everything is in alignment and those soft tissue and everything can support everything. Mm-hmm. But then even from a nutritional balance.
Nutritional balance. I was also going to say, you know, balance as well and strength, you know, structure, strength, balance of the body for injury prevention. But then when it comes to the nutrition side of things, you know, making sure that you're eating in a way that, you know, I talked about that vitamin K2, eating in a way that you're supporting the bacteria that make that vitamin K2.
So we need to look at that as part of the treatment. And, of course, you know, one of the good things with working with a clinical nutritionist is we know that it's more than just calcium and vitamin D. But a lot of people aren't getting even tested for vitamin D to know that that's part of it. But we need other nutrients to really
And also to see, you know, how's your alkalinity in your body? Because if your body is too acidic, if you're under a lot of stress or if your diet has too much sugar in it or so many other things, then it can make that pH balance in your body is off, which is going to leach some of those minerals, you know, from your bones in order to buffer that pH.
Absolutely.
Because it's unsafe for the body to not have the proper pH.
And one of the things we also have to keep in mind, too, is our exercise programs as well, too. And when you're in recovery mode, you want to be able to heal and recover, but you want to be able to move as well, too, because we need that balance between resistance type of training. Mm-hmm. So keeping active as much as you can, weight-bearing exercises. And even from a Chinese medicine standpoint, there's been studies where they've done Qigong and Tai Chi, and that's helped with balance without having to go into big cardiovascular exercises or into gyms and stuff too. So that can actually be done to help out with balance. So looking at other things outside of just what's going on with your bone health is one of the great ways to help osteopenia and osteoporosis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's really important to work with someone who looks at those labs to really get the clues of what your body is revealing, you know, not just the external symptoms, but also the biochemical clues that are there.
We're going to be coming up to a break in just a minute, so we're going to try to get our other phone call in. But one of the big things that people don't think about with their bacteria is how it affects weight gain.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
a huge one.
Everyone kind of comes in and says, I'm gaining this weight. I can't get rid of it. You know, we've talked
and
about it.
No matter how little I eat, I'm still gaining. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about it from a... We talked about it from a adrenal standpoint and how the body is stressed and how what that does, which can affect that microbiome. But essentially, how are the bacteria helping us with weight gain? What's in our digestive tracts that are really driving things forward? We're going to go to a break in just a couple of minutes. We're going to be back, and you are listening to the Dr. Tom Rozelle Live Show. This is Dr. Stephanie Pina, and I am here with Eva El-Khabtib, and we are going to be talking about your microbiome, all those little buggers. Stay tuned with us, and we're going to be back in just a minute talking about obesity and weight gain.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
And welcome back to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. We are live in studio, and Dr. Rozelle is out learning, educating others on doing what he does best, whether it's here on the radio show or on in his books or on the website. But the staff comes up to represent for him. So I'm Dr. Stephanie Pina, and I'm here with our new clinical nutritionist, Eva. And we're going to be talking about, or leading into, I should say, her Wednesday night lecture, which is going to be Wednesday, June the 12th at 7 p.m., The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Getting to Know Your Intestinal Terrain, and really talking about all of the things inside of us that we don't think are always good for us, but they just need to be in the right proportions, and everybody's a little different.
Yes.
Not every single microbiome is the same, so we shouldn't treat it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when we look at treatment plans for anything else, we have to individualize it for the person.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get into a little bit of that, too, because like we said earlier, it's more than just a probiotic. It's more than just the fermented foods. But at least we got the thought process going.
Right, yeah.
So one of the things when we talk about the foods that go in the body, mm-hmm. How we metabolize them, how we go forward, and what we were leading into at the end of the break is the fact that this microbiome basically has a lot to do with our weight gain situation and obesity factors. And so when we think about that, we're going, how does that happen? So lead us into a little bit of what the role of this bacteria and the viruses and stuff are having in our body so that we kind of understand its role in obesity and not being able to
mm-hmm.
lose weight.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give a little background about how scientists started to have clues about this. So there's been for 70 years worldwide experimenting on farms of giving these farm animals like cattle and chickens and so on and so forth antibiotics. And with that, what they discovered very rapidly was that when these animals are given antibiotics, it made it that they needed to be fed less food in order to get heavier, you know, so you got more bang for your buck. That's one of those terms I like to use with some of these things. And why I say more bang for their buck is they'd have to pay less money for food and they'd be able to sell that animal for more profit because it had more weight to it. So when it was weighed at slaughter. So with humans, they started to wonder if there was something similar that was going on because you see many times that after people have had antibiotic exposure or knockout of their microbiomes, that there's weight that comes on more easily. And, you know, another topic that I'll present in the future has to do with people's genes. So we know that there's, you know, risk factor with weight development genetically, but you know, this is looking at the other side of the coin here with what gut flora you have, what organisms you have within you. And what they've discovered is when there is this unhealthy microbiome, this alteration in the microbiome, that it makes it that these organisms are now in this higher population, so it's out of balance from how it should be. These newer organisms are more, I guess I'd say, thrifty, that it takes less food, less energy consumption, less calories in order to store as fat the calories that were consumed and that were taken in. So genetically you call this thriftiness, you know, thrifty genes are the genes from the other side of that coin. You know, I was talking about the DNA side. But here when we talk about the organisms, so when you have that imbalance in them, you have that thriftiness that can occur as well.
So we have to think about, you know, we've talked about different types of foods and genetically genetically modified foods as well, too. So mm-hmm. with these meats and everything that's coming in, we were worried about the antibiotics that are in them, which have its own reaction. Yeah. But now we know that they're basically getting, when we're using a lot of meat products, mm-hmm. we're gaining weight because of the bacteria that they were giving, too, just to make them bigger.
The antibiotics that they were given that knocked out their bacteria.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when we also look at that, we know that bacteria in our, not the same bacteria, mm-hmm. obviously, but our bacteria, the good stuff, is also helping us get as many nutrients and helping with the metabolism of getting energy mm-hmm. from foods.
Right.
So when we can't even use that energy ourselves, it's going to waste as well. So everything, even when we're putting good foods in, they might not be getting as much as we can out of it. So.
Yeah, there's definitely that there as well. Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's always interesting, I think, when we see how the foods that we eat affect further down in our tract, mm-hmm. other than just getting what we need nutrient-wise. Is it good fat? Is it carbohydrate? Is it a protein?
It's so much more complex than that, right?
Exactly.
And that's where you have to listen to the person's history, and you have to look at their labs, and you have to see what it is that they're eating. And all of these little pieces are like pieces of a giant puzzle that all come together, and it allows you to figure out how you need to best support them.
Okay. One of the things, too, you brought up, I wanted to bring it up, too, during the immune response.
Yeah.
So obviously we don't want bad bacteria in it. They're going to grow and create infections. We think of that when we get tested for urinary tract infections, is there E. coli, and that's out of whack. And essentially, are we looking at what kind of intestines or bacteria is in our nasal cavity that might mm-hmm. create like sinus infections as mm-hmm. well, too? Can we speak a little bit on, you mentioned like kind of the immune response as well, too, but from where I was talking about autoimmune response last time, that plays a factor into it as well.
Huge, absolutely huge, because some of these organisms control, the ones that reside within your gut, control the expression of these immune responses that your body has. So if I talk, you know, about specific ones, you know, we have our regulatory T cells, which allow the body to recognize itself and not attack itself. You know, and that's these organisms aid in that. So preventing your body from attacking itself. So think autoimmune when I say that. They also are responsible for the Th17 cells, so T helper cells 17. And those ones allow the body to launch an inflammatory response. But if you have too many of the organisms that lead to that production of the Th17, then that increases the risk of the person having autoimmune. And what we see is this THC being elevated, and interesting, these organisms associated with that in these autoimmune conditions like rheumatoid arthritis and inflammatory bowel disease and so many of these other autoimmune conditions.
So when we're talking about this, and it's difficult to know, because unless someone say, even when you're looking at your stools or think everything looks weird, not that a lot of people like to do that to begin with, but it happens.
That's the thing they love when I start asking about.
it's not something we always are used to sharing with everybody, but we want to know.
I have to know.
Exactly. But how do we know, and I know you'll talk about this in lecture, but how do we know that we may not be, you know, developing and nourishing or bringing in the proper foods to actually set up shop so that we have good bacteria going on? What are some of the basics stuff that we could look for as far as symptoms or things that are lingering that show us that maybe our gut flora and the rest of the flora isn't well?
Our microbiome in general, you know, the organisms residing within the lungs or any of these other locations on or in the body. You know, so getting sick easily. You know, that's a nice clue there. If you get gassy when you eat, you know, we talk about digestively, you know, not having the right, you know, stomach acid or enough enzymes, but it can even be those organisms, you know, because one of my professors and Dr. Vasquez, who I saw give a talk not very long ago, I love Dr. Vasquez, I do a shout out for him, but one of the things that both of them brought up that really was surprising for me, actually shocking for me, was that the human body on its own doesn't produce these gases that we have in our large intestine, our bowels, that we're like, oh yeah, when I eat these things, I get so gassy. You know, like sulfur rich vegetables, like broccoli, for instance, but that it's the bacteria in you that are producing these gases. So even having, you know, a lot of gas production is a sign that things are out of balance.
And before we move on from gas, does the smell count?
Oh, of course the smell counts. You know, because if it's a sulfur odor, that tells me a lot about what organisms are there. It's these organisms that break down the sulfur with it, which is in those foods, you know, the broccoli, the cauliflower, the cabbages, and all of that, that their population is higher than it should be. So they're very beneficial and they're very much needed. But when you have too many of them, you have that excess sulfur production, which we can smell. But it also makes it that, and people here can't see what I'm holding up. I'm holding up my fingers, you know, and your cells that line your digestive tract are one cell layer thick. Right? So those gases, you think of the pressure. It's like you're putting pressure on these cells are just held together very, very delicately with these proteins, the tight junctions, and that pressure just pushes them open. So then it makes it that you have a greater chance or greater risk of things entering, passing through those cells into the bloodstream that shouldn't.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of times we refer that to as leaky gut.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we know that that can affect other organ systems as
Definitely.
Well, too.
Yep.
So we've,
because
we've,
the stuff is entering that shouldn't be in there.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that even in the oral cavity,
yes,
where we see how strep can affect heart disease and cardiovascular mm-hmm. disease. And even though we're definitely all in the mouth, it's part of the digestive mm-hmm. tract. It's got a chance
100%.
To get through.
Yep.
So we brought up stool real quickly, but mm-hmm. stool testing, I mean, that might be one way mm-hmm. to kind of look at it. And we do stool testing in the office as well, too. There's a number of different types of stool testing, so that mm-hmm. can vary. But speak briefly on kind of some of the basic things that we would find with a stool test
with
that might
stool
also
test?
Give us some mm-hmm. indication that we need to make either dietary changes mm-hmm. or other changes in our lifestyle that support a better microflora.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we get a whole bunch of information from it. So we are told a little bit about what's in there. And the labs that do this do a really nice job giving the interpreter an idea of the population amount, if it's outside of range, and how to go about treating that if you were to use herbals or other treatments. It also gives you the pH. So, you know, I talked about pH before when we're talking about osteopenia and osteoporosis, how everything needs to be in a proper balance pH-wise, but it tells you the pH of your stool, which has to be optimized as well as telling you how well your body is able to break down what enters in. So how well you're able to break down the fibers, how well you're able to break down the fats. So it's so many layers of information within those stool tests.
So not only are we getting the good bacteria amounts that are mm-hmm. in the stool, but the ones that are kind of the yellow zone in between,
yeah.
and then the ones
and
that
the
really can cause us
yeah.
the bad ones,
mm-hmm.
which this type of testing is very different than when you're, say, you've traveled abroad and you think there's other parasites or bacteria and stuff going on too.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to go to the phones again. And Michael, are you there? Because we can answer your question.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Michael. Hi. How are you?
Good.
What can we help you with?
Yes, I got a question about my mom came down with an outbreak of the shingles and kind of the breakout around her back and then under her left breast and a lot of pain and blistering. And they put her on a antiviral medication, mm-hmm. valacyclovir. And my question was, is there any other type of, you know, natural supplements that possibly can help, mm-hmm. you know, with the healing process?
Sure. And a lot of the times, too, when they kind of give these antivirals for shingles, because obviously that's a virus that's been usually associated mm-hmm. with chickenpox and doesn't necessarily have to be, but it's usually mm-hmm. there. What needs to happen is, you know, they give it within a certain time period. And really some of that is to help out with the antiviral part of it, but it doesn't really help out with them, the pain control and help that that slow process of healing. One of the things too can be very topical is we have a lot of patients that I see that come in and we do acupuncture and we do cold laser around there because we can help from a cellular level, which helps prevent needing to need all the antivirals, which also play an effect on the rest of the microbiome, but then also have an effect on the liver itself. So there are definitely things in there, and there's herbal antivirals that help out with shingles as well. So there certainly is, but we need to get a little bit more information about her. So hopefully if she's close by, it'd be great to see her at the Rozelle Center for Healing, and we can follow up too. From a dietary standpoint, what support at
just
home?
Just a really nice, well-rounded diet, something that's supportive of her gut and very gentle, you know, that really pushes those nutrients in a gentle, easy-to-absorb way, so like soups and stews, bone broth, as long as she doesn't have other gut stuff that's going on where that bone broth wouldn't be called for yet. But, you know, really pushing those nutrients in a manner that's the most easy for her body to absorb.
So one of the main things is we want to also look at, you know, was there a trigger that really sent this off?
Yes.
Because shingles can tend to be a little bit more stress-induced.
Mm-hmm.
The area and the location can obviously change, and as far as what you're seeing, you know, is there vesicle formation? It's going to follow a nerve pattern. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that the nerves above and below it and in that area, too, also aren't responding to the response, too. So it's an excellent question. I would say a lot of people come in with shingle pain. They're looking for something more natural, or they've missed that deadline for when they can take the antivirals, and they're just kind of saying, I need to treat not only the virus, but we need to treat the inflammation and everything else that's around it as well. We know the nerves go to other organ systems as well, too, so they might be infected. So glad that we can get you in, Michael. Thank you for hanging on the line with us.
Thank you, Michael.
And basically, it's a great segue into you have to look at multiple factors of what's going on in the body, whether it's bacteria or viral. And this happens to be a virus that starts the shingles infection. So I want to talk about an interesting thing with as far as the lecture coming up on Wednesday, but then also where do we see the future of kind of looking at what the microbiome does for us and what makes sense to the normal person as far as looking at their own bacteria, we'll say, and their own, and in a different way, in the way we look at it clinically as well, too. So when we come back from the break, we're going to discuss what's going over with your lecture. Hopefully you'll stay with us, and you'll also register either on RozelleCare.com or call the office 703-698-7117 to reserve your spot for this Wednesday's night's lecture. Eva's going to have a lot of information, and we're going to wrap it up in just a couple minutes. We'll be right back.
105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
And welcome back to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. We are live in studio taking your questions and discussing the microbiome, the good, the bad, and the ugly of what is going on in your intestinal flora and the rest of the body, too, because that's not just where those little buggers are hanging out. That is going to be the topic for this Wednesday's Rozelle Center in-house education, and it's going to be led by Eva, and essentially it's going to be a great one because we don't talk about this enough. We don't think about the other factors that we need to help keep our health in balance. It's all about the bad stuff that we get from one infection or another. So really, what are the good guys doing for us, and how do we keep them in check, and how do we look beyond just what commercials are telling us are going to do that for us? So Eva, please tell everybody what is going to be some of the main key topics that you're going to be going over during the lecture. And that way they kind of know, like, you know, what to, one, get excited for.
Mm-hmm.
And two, like, why really they should be thinking about this from a different perspective, because where it's a different topic than autoimmune disease and thyroid disease. And but we have to think about our digestive tract and the rest of us a little differently. Tell us more about the lecture coming up.
So I'll be talking about more and more detail clues to imbalances, you know, what symptoms you can look for, and what other things are used to understanding what's imbalanced, and examples of that, as well as exposures that you have and the impact that they can have on your microbiome, like some medications and exposure to things outside of that I'll say they're toxicants, you know, man-made toxic substances and materials, and how they affect all of that, as well as the food that you have, how you want to feed, who you want to keep around. You know, that's one of the things that you'll hear me saying quite a bit, feeding those organisms and what that looks like. And I'll also get into those probiotics, because really that's something that there's, you know, not much time for, and that's something that's really important, that if you're going to be given probiotics and take probiotics, that you feed those organisms. You know, I describe as like, you know, if I'm planting a plant, if I plant it and I don't provide it what it needs, it's not going to be able to grow and flourish. And it's the same with these organisms you have in your probiotics.
And we're going to briefly touch on the future, because we were talking before that understanding which bacterias and organisms are involved with different types of immune systems or the environment and stuff too, what we're exposed to can change. But then where do you go with treatment for that as well too, being able to specify which types of organisms would help certain types of people?
That's the future of all of this. You know, you see it in the news and you see it out there in these journals, like Harvard Medical School had a write-up about using probiotics and specific organisms for mood disorders, you know, for depression, and they're talking about it for bipolar disorder. They talk about probiotics and microbiome imbalances in people with inflammatory bowel diseases, for instance. So that's really where all of this is headed. It's my vision of where it's headed is that at some point in the future, and I think it's going to be a very short term where that will be, is where they're going to look at what's going on with you and prescribe a probiotic blend that will be made specifically for you, that's going to have the organisms that you need based upon what's going on.
So really looking at not, again, just symptoms,
yeah,
but what's going on in the stuff we're not thinking of. And that's why it's so important to work with professionals who understand, one, the current research coming out, two, understands how everything works together as a holistic system,
which
instead of it just being
one.
Which
is why I love at our
center,
yeah.
And then basically, how do I best put everything together so that I can flourish as a human and really pass it on for the next generation?
Of course, yeah.
Because we mentioned baby health, it has to depend on mom.
And you and I were talking before the segment, you know, that in industrialized nations, like here in the U.S., that there's less of this diversity than in these non-industrialized nations. And what role does that play with people's health?
So your digestive tract, more than just the good bacteria and the bad bacteria, that's going to be the topic. We hope that everyone is going to be able to make it out on Wednesday night. I think it's going to be a popular one, so you better call in quickly or go online to RoselleCare.com. Sign up, register for your spot at the lecture, and we'll see you next week.